I want to welcome you all, a very warm welcome to our November monthly action call. I'm Dan Kahn, the National Field Director for the Peace Alliance, and we have a very full agenda as usual. In a moment, I'll introduce our special November guest, Sam Daly Harris, and we'll have a chance for discussion with him. Then we'll have a few quick announcements, and we'll hear about some grassroots victories, and then we'll turn our attention to our monthly action for November and have some coaching, including a laser talk. But before we do any of that, I'd like for us to take a moment to reflect together on the events over the last few days in Paris and Beirut. And I invite us all here to hold space together for some of the grief, some of the outrage and despair, some of the agony that's coming to the surface, perhaps in ourselves and in many others, around these horrible, horrible incidents. Certainly our hearts go out to those most immediately affected, and I think our hearts also go out to those who are seeing and hearing this news and who might be prone to even deepening despair, anger, and tangible fear. So let's have a moment of connection with all our human family. And perhaps let this grief remind us of some of what we may share in common. Thank you. And further, I'm deeply grateful, as I imagine many of you also are, that on this day with so much mourning, that I find myself coming together in a community that can face some of this pain and can feel it and can share it, and also almost immediately perhaps recognize that we all can do so much better than what we've been seeing and hearing about, and that we're willing to stand in that possibility for positive change and to take action to bring it about. Some change among nations, among religions, among ethnic groups, in our local communities, in our families, and in our own hearts. So I thank and acknowledge all of you for coming together on what, in D.C. at least, is a gorgeous Saturday to connect and to strengthen ourselves and each other in this work. So thank you. In just a moment, I'm going to introduce you all to our special November guest, Sam Daly Harris, whom many of you already know. Before I do that, I'd like to remind him a little bit about whom he is talking with. Sam, the folks on this call are people like Nancy Merritt in San Francisco who attended our national conference last month. Nancy coordinated not only visits to her own two senators and her member of the House of Representatives on Capitol Hill, she also helped orchestrate visits by California volunteers to every single member of the California federal delegation. That's both senators and all 53 offices of their U.S. House members, in many cases holding sit-down meetings, and in all cases sharing information and materials regarding domestic and international peace-building priorities. These are the kind of actions, as you know, that really can move mountains. Now let me introduce you, Sam, to our field. Folks, we are delighted to have Sam Daly Harris as our guest speaker for this month's conference call. Sam has been coaching us, as many of you know, on developing our action teams for about the past 2 years, and he provided powerful trainings last month at our national conference here in D.C. Sam founded the anti-poverty grassroots lobby Results in 1980. He co-founded the Microcredit Summit campaign in 1995, and he founded the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation in 2012. The 20th anniversary edition of his book, Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government, was released 2 years ago, and I consider that book something of a Bible for anyone interested in helping this nation to live up to its promise of effective democratic participation and shared blessings of a compassionate, respectful society. We are thrilled and deeply grateful to have you here with us today, Sam. A very warm welcome, And I know you wanted to share some of your reflections on the Peace Alliance, so I'll turn this over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dan, and hello to everyone. On a sad day for Paris and a sad day for the world, there's no better antidote than to know that who we are people working for solutions and for peace, and I thank each and every one of you for that. I wanted to say how excited I am to be on this call with you and wanted to take a moment to say how foundational the Peace Alliance's work is, what a steep mountain of hopelessness we have to climb in our culture, and how inspired I am by the breakthroughs members of the Peace Alliance action teams are having. So first, the foundational part. My wife is a Presbyterian minister with a specialized ministry to the Children's Defense Fund, and I'm Jewish. And I went with her to church recently, and a baby was being baptized, and the pastor said the same exact benediction that I hear at my synagogue, which ends, "May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and grant you peace." The first section is, "May the Lord bless you and keep you," then, "May the Lord shine his face upon you and be gracious unto you," and finally, "May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and grant you peace." It's almost like saving the best for last and grant you peace. I was at another event 2 weeks ago, a memorial service and educational event organized in memory of my rabbi, who died 7 months ago at the age of 45 from cancer. Part of the event was a session on mindfulness. The woman ended the mindfulness session by having us chant Om Shanti, Shanti, meaning peace. The calls for peace are everywhere. They're foundational. The longing for peace is everywhere. But so too is the hopelessness about doing anything about it. So let me share this quote that points to who you are in the work for peace. It's by Alex Steffen. Optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with a large population of people who think nothing is going to get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience. What's really radical is being willing to look right at the magnitude and difficulty of the problems we face and still insist that we can solve those problems. And once again, optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with a large population of people who think nothing is going to get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience. What's really radical is being willing to look right at the magnitude and difficulty of the problems we face and still insist that we can solve those problems, end of quote.
Thank you, Sam. That's a beautiful quote and a beautiful reminder. Will you share with us, again, perhaps for some people, about your route into activism?
Sure. I know some of you have heard this before. I love telling my story from hopeless to action, and hopefully you have your own that you share. I have a bachelor's degree and master's degree in music and played percussion instruments in the Miami Philharmonic Orchestra for 12 years. Then I started the anti-poverty lobby Results 35 years ago. People often ask, what was the motivation for such a big change from music to action on poverty? When I look back, several experiences come to mind. I played timpani in the orchestra at high school graduation in 1964. Just before the ceremony, a flute player came back to the percussion section and told me that a high school fraternity brother, a year younger, had died the day before in a tractor-trailer accident in Georgia. It was her next-door neighbor, so she knew about it before I did. I was 17. When I was 17, I thought I had forever. Mortality was an irrelevant concept. But during the mourning period and the funeral, I began asking the questions of purpose. Why am I here? What am I here to do? 4 years later, 1968, around college graduation, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. More questions. What is this life? What is this death? Why am I here? What am I here to do? No answers, but the questions were getting clearer. 9 years later, still a musician, I went to a presentation on ending world hunger, thinking it was hopeless. At that presentation, I realized I wasn't hopeless about my perceived lack of solutions. There was no mystery around growing food or basic health or literacy. I was hopeless about human nature, that people would never get around to doing the things that could be done. But there was one human nature I had some control over, my own, and my questions. Why am I here? What am I here to do? So I got involved in a big way, and this is the end of the story. In 1978 and 1979, I spoke to 7,000 high school students about ending world hunger and read quotes calling for the political will to end hunger. So I asked the 7,000 students to name their member of Congress, just the name. Fewer than 3% could answer correctly. Over 97% couldn't name their member of Congress. And results started out of the gap between the calls for the political will to end hunger on the one hand and the lack of basic information on who represented us in Washington on the other. So I say that our work in the Peace Alliance action teams is answering the call for the political will for a world of peace.
Wow, that really resonates, Sam, that our work in the Peace Alliance action teams is answering the call for the political will for a world of peace. That really touches me right where I live. So folks, Sam has wanted to have a discussion, not just him talking, but more of a back and forth discussion. And he wants to start by asking you some questions. I think he's going to go ahead now.
Okay, great. And so we have about, I'm going to ask three questions. We have about 3 or 4 minutes for responses on each one. And so here's my first question. Who do you want to be in the world? And how can being an active member in a Peace Alliance action team help forward that? So if you're not on an action team on this call, please know that we're delighted you're on the call. And perhaps you can listen to the question and people's responses to it and find value there. So here it is again. Especially given the tragedy in Paris, who do you want to be in the world? And how can being an active member in a Peace Alliance action team help forward who you want to be in the world? So it might be silent for a moment while people think about their answer, and so I'm going to repeat it more. And we, of course, just have a couple of minutes for each response, but push one if you'd like to speak, and then I believe either Matt or Dan will call on you. Who do you want to be in the world, and how does being an active member of a Peace Alliance action team contribute to who you want to be in the world? Is anyone willing to go first, push one on your handset, and we'll call on you?
I have a volunteer, Sam. First person up is Cheryl Kaplan. Go ahead, Cheryl. You're unmuted.
And Cheryl, just give your name and city for everyone else.
I'm Cheryl Kaplan from Gainesville, Florida. And Sam, I want to be somebody who makes a difference in my community and people can count on me.
I want to be someone who makes a difference in my community and people count on me. And how does being a member of a Peace Alliance action team contribute to that?
Well, when I see a problem in Gainesville or in my area, I try and figure out what I can do about it and reach out to whoever it is that might be able to help me.
Okay, brilliant, brilliant. Thank you. Can we hear from someone else? Who do you want to be in the world, and how does being a member of a Peace Alliance action team help you be that? And push one if you'd like to share something. And Dan, let me know if we have someone.
Yeah, the next person is Nancy Merrick. Go ahead, Nancy. Oh,
Great.
great. Why does it keep unmuting itself? Muting and unmuting. Now you're unmuted, I think. Go ahead.
San Francisco, Berkeley area. I want to be hopeful enough to continue to work on peace.
You're cutting in and out, Nancy, for some reason. Are you muting yourself?
That I want to stay or be a hopeful enough person to continue working on peace.
Who I want to be in the world is a hopeful enough person to continue working on peace. Is there any more you wanted to add? I jumped in on you.
No, I think being a member of action teams and our California Department of Peace Building team and our National Department of Peace Building team provides that community where we all keep reminding each other why we're doing this work, and that way we can continue.
Okay, great. We keep reminding each other of why we're doing that work. I'm going to go to the next one, and we'll hear from more people in just a moment. I'm asking these questions to help you go deeper and to remind you how important you are, both as advocates for effective peace-building tools and as pioneers in a revolution of citizen engagement, both of which are so crucial to human progress and well-being. So some of us have a group of people on our action team. We have three or four or more people on most of the monthly calls. Others are a bit more alone. What do you find inspiring and what do you find daunting about the idea of having a group of action team members around you? You could also address this. Some of us have a very small team around us or no team at all. What holds you back from growing that team? So I'm going to repeat all of that. Some of us have a group of people on our action team. We might have three or more people on most of the monthly calls. Others are a bit more alone. What do you find inspiring and what do you find daunting about the idea of having a great group of action team members around you? You could also address this. Some of us have a very small team or no team at all. What holds you back from growing that team? Please press 1 to talk. And this is a great moment to just be honest and really vulnerable about what we're up against or whatever. Because, you know, I spoke earlier in the call about the hopelessness that we face. Even though peace is foundational, hopelessness is everywhere. Please press 1. And Dan, let me know if someone would like to go first.
Okay. There's still no one showing up on my screen. I put all the hands down from last time, so if you
okay.
had your hand up for the last question and you want to raise it again, please go ahead and press 1. There's one.
Okay.
Shannon Betters in Rochester. Hi, Shannon.
Hi,
go ahead,
Dan.
Shannon.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Sam. And to Nancy and Cheryl as well. In Rochester, New York, we really have a limited team. So it's me, and then we have a college student that I mentor. And really what's prevented the team is growing is not the invitations, but more so just the lack of follow-through on people invited. And so what I did, kind of with some coaching, was when there was a shooting outside of our Boys and Girls Club after a peaceful basketball game this last summer, and there were seven kids shot. I went into the inner city community where some people were trying to do other solutionary activities, and it's called the TLW group here in Rochester, and started participating in what they were doing outside of just rallying. There is a group, a community there that has decided, you know, rallying isn't enough. We need to actually be working in active solutions. They're developing things such as the Father and Son Initiative because they realize that with mass incarceration, absentees of fathers in the community is causing a very distinct
gap in how these children's needs are met as they're being raised. So I brought the Peace Alliance to them, and it became more along the lines of how can we serve you rather than you join us.
Okay, great.
And then that's that.
So that's brilliant. So let me ask you, you kind of raised two issues. One is moving more deeply into the community and kind of bringing the Peace Alliance to them. And you also mentioned something about, like, I didn't have a team around me because of lack of follow-through. Any thoughts on that piece? Are there people who would participate, but you might say they need a little extra hand-holding or follow-through? Is there any of that you would add? Or?
Sadly, the truth is that the suburbs, people are busy and they're comfortable in their own lives, and the interest just was not there. But when you go to where the problems are, that's where you see people with a strong desire and commitment to follow through, to the point that they were, you know, two of the gentlemen that I've been collaborating with were very, for lack of a better word, impressed with my follow through and my desire to actually participate and not just show up for one meeting and not do anything else.
Brilliant. Okay, brilliant. So, thank you, Shannon. Dan, do we have one more? And then I'm going to go to the third piece.
Sure, there are a few more, but I'll go with Gia in San Diego. Go ahead, Gia.
Hi, Gia.
Hi. Nice to meet you. One thing that is inspiring about the groups that I've seen is more solutions are being created, or people that have solutions are being, you know, more collaborative. They're sharing those solutions. This is what works for us, and this is what doesn't work for us. And what I've found to be challenging, I would say, or daunting, is finding common ground on what works and doesn't work, because sometimes a lot of the actions, the monthly actions, are actions that existing groups here or existing Peace Alliance groups here do not want to take, because they don't see it as a solution, what's happening here at school in the community. So they have different solutions or different approaches to that. And while they support what we're doing, they also want us to include their solutions into what we're doing. So what Ms. Cynthia Gilliam was suggesting, I spoke with her last night, is that we unite and collaborate more instead of having us ask them to join us or them asking us to join them, kind of join, you know, in those solutions. For example, it could involve the Peace Alliance staff and us, especially because we're here attending some of the peace rallies at schools or peace events or some of the peace marches they have going on for next year or years ahead of time. But just kind of being involved, taking notes on what works, what doesn't work, what's needed, what the kids want most of all, because we can imagine different solutions, but if we don't listen to those that are actually impacted or affected, then we don't know what's going to work for them. And
brilliant.
The reality is I've found that a lot of the groups here have already taken actions we've taken or we're planning to take. They've already made the calls. They've already written the letters. They've already reached out to media. They've already met with all their representatives. So what's next? And that is something that we're looking into. Like, what do we do next? So that's
brilliant.
What we're looking into.
Your response just then, which, of course, your response, which mirrors some of what Shannon was saying, leads to my last point. So that's brilliant. So here's a response to what you just said. The action teams are having some really great breakthroughs, enrolling Republican Tea Party members and generating meeting. That's amazing. What we have to realize is that if we go into a member of Congress's office and find that they support our work, we're not done. And if we find they oppose our work for some reason, we're not done either. We want to get opponents up to neutral and get those who are neutral up to being supporters, and then get those who are supporters up to being an advocate, and get advocates for peace building up to being leaders and spokespersons, and eventually get the leaders and spokespersons in Congress, for example, to being a champion for peace building. So if our member of Congress says, I support you on this, we have to come up with more and more public actions, more and more daring actions they can take to move from being a supporter to being an advocate and a spokesperson. So, for example, members of the House of Representatives can do a one-minute talk on the floor of the House, and you could ask them to do a one-minute, and their one-minute could go something like this, and you're going to hear it in a moment, and if they don't do it on the floor, they could send it in their newsletter, they could put it in their website, they could do a letter to the editor. It goes like this. Mr. Speaker, I met recently with a group of constituents who are members of the Peace Alliance Action Team in my district. They shared their support for the Youth Promise Act, a bipartisan bill that would fund violence prevention programs in communities throughout the nation. They reminded me that the U.S. has about 5% of the world's population and incarcerates 25% of the world's prisoners, and that we incarcerate more youth in this country per capita than the next 12 industrialized countries combined. I support the Youth Promise Act, and I know a lot of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle support it as well. I promise my constituents that I'll be reaching out to other members of this body to ensure its passage. In a world with what seems like an endless stream of violence, isn't it time we taught violence prevention to our young people? End of quote. Now, that was just about a minute, and it could be used, like I said, to form a basic message to constituents in their newsletter or put on their website or perhaps in a letter to the editor by the member of Congress. These are examples of helping a member of Congress move from being a supporter to being an advocate and a spokesperson. So anyone have a question or a comment about this champion scale? We really have about 2.5 minutes, but question or comment of having members of Congress move from opponent to neutral, neutral to supporter, supporter to advocate, and then up the scale? Just push one on your hand set.
I'm seeing none yet. Again, I put the hands down after the last question.
Yeah, okay, now I'm just going to say, Gia, you know, it said a lot of these folks have gone to the media, written Congress, met with Congress, don't know quite what's next. So this was really addressing one piece of the next and not stopping with, oh, they're too good, they don't need to hear from us, or they're a supporter already, we're done, or they're too bad, there's no use working with them. Anyone?
I see Cheryl Kaplan has her hand up. Hi, Cheryl.
Okay.
Hi, I wasn't going to jump in here, but I wanted to tell you that our congressman supports the Youth Promise Act, and we met with him, and I had this crazy idea to ask him if he would be willing to help set up a special order. And he got very excited about it, and that's going to happen. And the other thing is, I'm writing an op-ed for him to sign and get published. And I'm thinking that maybe we should try and get it published in the Hill magazine rather than in Gainesville,
Brilliant.
So that it could go to his colleagues. Who I know
yeah.
they get that magazine. So
yeah.
anyway, that was a huge thing that we were able to do yesterday.
Fabulous. And examples of going from supporter, which he is, to advocate and spokesperson and leader. So congratulations. And we're going to end right here. Dan, I might want to suggest on that question about having people around us that you alone, you know, on our action team, you alone or the two of us could use one of the leader calls to go over that workshop on building a team written by the citizen climate lobby person who typically has 28 people in her room in Madison, Wisconsin on their monthly conference calls and figure out what we might be able to learn from her and her workshop.
Absolutely. And as far as timing-wise, if you wanted to comment on a little bit more on what Cheryl shared, that was going to be one of our sort of squeezed-in grassroots victories. So if you wanted to take another minute to say just how powerful that step is, you're welcome to go a minute over our schedule.
Do you want to have Cheryl say any more? I mean, the whole notion that she's in a position where her Tea Party Republican congressman is not only a co-sponsor, but did he say yes to the op-ed or not quite yet yes? But he's certainly in a position. Go ahead.
He said yes.
Yeah, and did he say yes to maybe the Hill instead of the Gainesville Sun?
No, I haven't. I just came up with that this morning, but I did have a question. He's going to have, we only have, I think, 4 or 5 Republican supporters, and we have, I don't know how many Democratic, supporters. So I was going to actually write him a letter and say, ask him what I could do to help him, because when you do a special order, you have a whole hour, and you have people on both sides talking about the same issue. And so it's going to be an uphill battle trying to get other Republicans to come in and say, yes, I'd like to do that. So I was going to write him a letter about that. I don't know exactly what I can do to help, but the thing about publishing it on the Hill, in the magazine The Hill, is that every one of the congressmen and senators get that magazine. And I don't think it's going to be worth anything for it to go into the Gainesville Sun.
Well, here's the deal. The bottom line is congratulations on finding more and more daring things, public actions that your member can take to move from a supporter to an advocate and spokesperson. So congratulations. And Dan, I'm going to stay on and listen if I'm allowed to.
Of course.
Can I just add something?
Sure, go ahead.
Hart Phoenix came with me, and we were talking beforehand, and she said to me, well, you know, what is it that you want me to do? And I wanted her to talk about the exciting things that have happened in Gainesville. And so that's how we got started talking. And then I had this really wild-ass idea to ask him to do this a special order. And then I thought, well, maybe I could go ahead and do that. And Dan told me that was rare, but, you know, it happened. But when I mentioned it, he got very excited and said that he and so he actually decided when we would do it and what it would do it in April when it's Child Abuse Month. And so we started talking about children. And, I mean, it was just like just an unbelievable conversation, and everyone was, we were all very excited to.
Brilliant. Bravo. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Congratulations. Over to you, Dan.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks, all of you, for participating. And thank you, Sam, so much. Always a pleasure to be working with you. So, folks, welcome to the second half of this call. We're going to be looking together at the November action sheet in about 15 minutes. So if you haven't already downloaded it or have it available to look at, please take a look. You can go to our website, peacealliance.org, and on the right side there are some red ribbons. One of them says Monthly Actions. So go ahead to that monthly action page, and at the top section there will be the November call and the November action sheet. I've got just a couple of quick announcements. One regarding statistics and reporting. These are your achievements, some of your achievements. I know you're involved in lots of stuff and in your daily life. You do lots of beautiful things for the planet and for each other. But as far as these things we keep track of, over the last 2 months, we've had 5 letters to the editor published, 5 letters to the editor, no op-eds, no editorials, no radio interviews, 3 newspaper articles have been generated, 158 congressional visits, And I've got to say, we haven't entirely parsed those out, which of those are sit-down visits and which are drop-offs. So we'd like to make sure we're aware of how many visits are real sit-down conversations. But by any standard, that's a huge number, so congratulations. One public presentation and one tabling event. That brings the year-to-date statistics up to 13 letters to the editor published, 5 op-eds published, 5 newspaper articles generated, 1 editorial generated, 2 radio interviews, 170 congressional visits, and again, we're going to get more specific about that number as we get more information, 9 tabling events, 20 coalition building meetings, and 7 presentations. Okay, so congratulations on all those achievements. Each of those pieces, I like to remind folks, each piece is published in a newspaper. That could be reaching tens of thousands of people. If you have a letter or an op-ed that reflects about the need for peace building and solutions for peace building and policies that can actually take effect and make this a more peaceable world, that information reaches the eyes and hearts of tens of thousands of people in an average newspaper. So that's a really powerful act to create tangible hope and really change the landscape of our world together. The second announcement is that we may have a schedule shift in the wind. We've been looking at least experimenting with moving this call to a weeknight. And I think we're going to experiment with that over the next 2 months. I think because it's not entirely definite. We've been airing it out among the action teams, and we need to just check in with a few more people to try to make sure we make this work best for everybody. We will keep you informed as best as we are able, but we may be looking at the second Tuesday of the month for our next monthly action call. Okay, it would be at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and this would be an effort to make this more available for more people. And the emphasis, I think, might shift to completing the monthly action during the following few days, because we'd acknowledge that a lot of people might have a harder time getting together on that second Tuesday, but that we might actually get more people on the call if they were encouraged to dial in on a Tuesday evening. So more to come on that. I'm sorry it's not more definite than it is, but we'll get you that information as soon as we have it pinned down. A quick note on the conference. You've heard a little bit about it. We had a wonderful conference. There were over 100 people in attendance here in Washington, D.C. There were over 100 congressional office visits. We had some tremendous breakthroughs. There are videos available that you can see on our website, and I just encourage you to take a look. And if you have had congressional meetings during that time and you haven't reported them yet, please go to the reporting page on our website, which you should have received an email from Lori about where to find that reporting page. So go ahead and check your email, search for Lori's name, search for my name, and find that page to do that reporting. Okay, moving on to grassroots victories. The first person I want to ask to share, let me make sure I can find her on our list here so I can unmute her quickly. There she is Jennifer Carr in Alaska, a native of Seward, at least current resident of Seward. And Jennifer has done some amazing work since the conference and getting some articles published. So Jennifer, will you go ahead and tell us about that?
Oh, hi. Well, Lori just asked me to talk about how I did the press release, because we were able to get it in both of our local papers. And I was kind of worried about, ooh, how to do this. And then when I saw the template, it made it so easy. Copied it off and saw what was needed and got some quotes from Lori and myself and mailed it in, and the local papers published it right away, and I called the Anchorage paper, which is a bigger paper, to make sure I sent it in correctly, but it was never published there. But the local papers led to another interview. One of the women who does the online reporting from Seward saw it and then interviewed us for about an hour, and then did some research and wrote another very nice article online. So it was very fast, and then what impressed me too is we've had so many comments from people that have seen it, so it's really put the name of the Peace Alliance out there. So it worked well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for doing that. And just for folks that were not at the conference, might not be aware of this, we created a template of a news release. So it's basically the skeleton of an article, and then Jennifer and other people modified this template and then submitted it to a local paper, and then made a follow-up phone call to say, hey, I just submitted this article, and what do you think about it? So it sounds like Jennifer went ahead and did this, and not only did they run an article, but another newspaper also that was connected with the same newspaper company ran a second article, and then a reporter contacted you to interview you and Lori, and then created a third piece that was an independent article by that newspaper. Is that what happened?
Right, right. So it was pretty exciting.
Tremendous, tremendous. And as I said, each of these news pieces, we're talking about tens of thousands. That newspaper, I imagine, has a circulation of, 30, 40, maybe 50,000 people, something like that. So thank you. Thanks for your work and for sharing it with us. And it really warms my heart just to think about that information about the fact that people care about these issues, the fact that there are practical steps that can address the violence and incarceration that we see around us and the atrocities that we see in the world, and that there are policies that everyday people can take action to promote that will change the world. So thank you for doing that. The second grassroots victory was going to be Cheryl Kaplan, but she's already shared about that amazing special order, which means that there's a plan in place to have an hour on the floor of the House of Representatives in April, and Congressman Yoho is carrying this forward to have an hour on the floor of the House discussing the merits and the importance of the Youth Promise Act. So tremendous victory this week from Gainesville, Florida. And the third person, going back to Alaska, we're keeping Alaska well in our sights, is our wonderful Assistant National Field Director, who's also a team leader, Lori Draper. And Lori not only had something published recently, but can share a story of some amazing repercussions, some amazing results that can flow after getting something published. Lori, why don't you go ahead and share that with us?
Thanks, Dan. You know, Dan, I had such a fantastic time at the conference. I came home inspired and hopeful and rededicated to making a difference in the world, and I really want to keep that alive in me. And Jennifer really helped when she had those two press releases published and then the article that followed. You know, people are talking about it. It's front of mind. And because of her dedication and follow through on the commitment that we made at the conference to getting that published and letting people know what we're working toward. You know, I've become an avid reader of the opinion pages, and I didn't used to be. But coming back from the conference with our amazing speakers top of mind, I read the paper with increased interest, and it seems like more articles are jumping out at me as opportunities to speak out. And this, it's been almost 2 weeks ago now, an article on Alaskan prison reform appeared, and that one really jumped out at me. It stated that if we didn't change our ways, we would need 1,800 new prison beds in the near future. I immediately thought of Pete Lee and his amazing story of bringing restorative justice into the mainstream in Colorado and what a positive impact it's had there. So my letter to the editor was really short. It was thanking our state legislators for considering prison reform and mentioning Colorado's successes. The paper printed it 4 days after I submitted it, just as I was giving up. It was a week ago Friday. And at 10 o'clock on Friday morning, I received a call from a person who's in charge of Colorado restorative justice training. She has a home in Alaska, too, and her husband was reading the paper in Alaska, saw my letter, looked me up, thank goodness I'm listed in the book. He called her, and then she called me to offer me support and encouragement in bringing restorative justice to Alaska. She gave me some tangible ideas of what next steps to take, and when she comes back to Alaska in January, she's going to get together with me and hopefully the chief of police in Seward to talk about some things that we can implement right away. Now I'm on a whole new high of the possibilities for change, and what if I hadn't sat down and wrote that 166 words to the paper? Who knows if I'd ever learned about Kiri Schmidt of Soldotna, Alaska, and Colorado. You know, I'm continually reconvinced that it's these small but sometimes courageous steps taken by all of us that are going to change our world.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, that's so powerful. And I'm just reminded of I'll get the number wrong, but Sam has told me about one of the people in the Citizens Climate Lobby who is dedicated to writing a letter every week, just week in, week out, just wrote a letter every week, and had something like 176 letters to the editor published just by having a weekly practice of sitting down and doing it. So this is the kind of thing, just keeping an eye open and watching for opportunities. And as far as bringing it into your community and being aware of these restorative justice connections, this is something I know restorative justice has a special place in the hearts of many of us. And we're so proud and happy that we have Molly Rowan Leach as our restorative justice fellow. And I've asked her if she'd speak for a couple of minutes just to kind of remind folks of this great resource that we have. Restorative Justice on the Rise is a telecom council that Molly hosts. And it's something that the archives of the call and the call itself are available for all of you to enjoy and share and possibly make the kind of connections that Lori is making to bring it into her community in more full force. So welcome, Molly, and I'm glad to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's great to be here. And I just want to say hello to everybody out there today, and thank you so much for everything that you do. I love what Lori just said about the small acts, and if we can consolidate and make more simple these small steps, of course, the larger picture can be very overwhelming in these times. And I couldn't agree more, Lori, that it's these small, very large acts, and we have much more influence than we might realize in just making that small commitment of 160 or 70 words that you were describing. As many of you may know, many of you are friends and colleagues of mine as well, and of course of the Peace Alliance on your action teams throughout the nation. I have the privilege and opportunity of working with many people in the field of restorative justice, both here in Colorado and nationwide, with the aim of supporting the movement, connecting the dots, and helping people to get the tools and information they need to come back to that inward inspiration that allows them to find that spot, whether it's through letters, whether it's through building relationships like Lori is going to be up in Alaska, or both and beyond, in planting those seeds and building the relationships, creating the space for inquiries where restorative justice and processes become quite verdantly possible. And in fact, even appealing. The statistics don't lie. And here in Colorado, we have, many of you know this probably, but I'll just reiterate the statistic out of Longmont Community Justice Partnership, and with the wonderful belief and leadership, solid, steady, and connective and real in the community from the police chief, Michael Butler up in Longmont, who has actually been a guest on the series, which is also a podcast based in Creative Commons and available to anyone who's interested in listening into these, by the way. And I'll talk just a bit more about that in a moment. But in Longmont, we have a micro example of something that has taken off, and that has taken off over the blood, sweat, and deep belief and some tears of many people, including Pete Lee, including Deb Witzel and the late Beverly Title, and folks who have helped to make it possible that they have an 8% recidivism rate in the county of and town of Longmont. They've teamed up with schools. They've teamed up with their neighborhoods. They take neighborhood walks, which is actually one of the leading edge points that seem to really be also shared with the River Phoenix Center at Peacebuilding, where it seems like they're very good at committing to making real connections. So I just wanted to share that quick little microcosm for you. I know many of you are aware that this is happening and growing in many places across the country. And just to point out the power of story as it relates to the Longmont community, there was a police officer named Greg Ruprecht, who is still currently a police officer. He's now a huge advocate for restorative justice. He was very much not an advocate for it. He thought it was kumbaya and everybody hugging, and he was a self-proclaimed typical, you know, out of the police academy kind of police officer with that paradigm leading him. But that story of him seeing some youth break into a chemical plant and realizing their lives could have been so different if he would have arrested them and put them through the typical system. He slowly but surely, over that year after that incident, changed his whole view of what justice is. So it's stories like that and so many others that are helping us to raise the bar of awareness about the true power of restorative justice and how innate it is inside of us as human beings. I just want to point a practical direction for any of you who have not seen the article that honors the work of Longmont and that was written, let's see, a couple years ago now. It went out over the airwaves online, starting at Transformation Open Democracy, and then was syndicated at Yes Magazine and also over at Daily Good and other sources. So its readership is close to 100,000 to date. And that's the article is entitled Six Boys, One Cop, and the Road to Restorative Justice. And I'd also like to just share with you that Restorative Justice on the Rise has been going on for almost five years now. You can go to restorativejusticeontherise.org to find podcasts of all of the speakers that we've shared with. The council is for all of us, and so we welcome people's feedback and participation. It's very highly valued. It's not about just one person speaking out. It's about us engaging, a lot like what we do here. And also a new development with Restorative Justice on the Rise is that we are identifying important needs and important edges in the movement, such as with teachers. Their feeling of not being able to implement another thing because they're naturally already overwhelmed and they have very full plates as it is. So recently we interviewed Kate Cranis and Carolyn Boyce Watson and identified snippets that are 5 minutes and under, made them into audios that address things like how to add a restorative element to schools and how it adds value instead of being seen as taking away precious time. Another example would be working with the power dynamic. How do we work with the power dynamic as it relates to restorative justice? And then, of course, the full-on hour segment is building restorative school communities. So that's at restorativejusticeontherise.org. And then over at our Peace Alliance website, finally, and then I'll stop talking, is a page where you can find some good resources that have fact sheets, what is RJ, RJ the evidence, and that's at peacealliance.org. And then you just scroll down to and click on restorative justice, and it'll lead you to that page. And you'll also find quite a bit of a resource section, including a national clickable map of restorative justice and related organizations state by state. So I just want to thank you all for being here today, and thank you for allowing me to share a bit about how we can serve each other.
Wonderful, Molly. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for all that you're doing and sharing. And that website, again, is restorativejusticeontherise.org, and you can also find a lot of the material at peacealliance.org on the Restorative Justice page. So without further ado, let's go into our monthly action. I'd love to see a hand from somebody who's willing to read the first few paragraphs of the November action sheet. Please press 1 on your keypad if you've got the November action sheet in front of you. and you're willing to read the first few paragraphs really kind of clearly and briskly, because as usual, our agenda is full. We've got 5 minutes ahead of us. Let's make them count. Anybody feel like doing a quick reading for us? Oh, there's one. Ann Abdu. Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Hi. Okay, how are you?
Oh, good, thanks. And you're in Livonia, Michigan today?
Yes.
Great, welcome. Will you go ahead and read that action sheet for us, just the top few paragraphs?
Okay, rally Republican support for the Youth Promise Act with an email and follow-up phone call to your nearest Republican Congress member or members who are not yet co-sponsored. Making stronger, safer communities using proven peace-building tools and ending epidemics of youth incarceration and violence is what this action is about. While YPA's introduction was strongly bipartisan in both House and the Senate, this bill needs more conservative support, and you can help. If you have one or more Republican senators or a Republican House member, or there's a district with a Republican House member, any and all of those could be your targets for an email and follow-up call with a request.
Perfect. Thank you. So the idea is to find the nearest Republican member of Congress who is not already a co-sponsor. And that could be one of your senators, and you're welcome to do more than one. If you have two senators who are Republicans who are not yet co-sponsors, please feel free to reach out to both of them. If you have a House member who is a Republican, you could reach out to him or her as well. If you don't have a senator or a House member who is a Republican, then look at the districts around you. You can Google for a congressional district map of your state, find out who the nearby Republicans are. Any questions about this? There's one note. If you're looking outside of your district, you may not be able to use their form on their contact page on their website. So you might either have to skip that section and go directly to a phone call, or search for somebody who you know in their district who can send that email for you on your behalf, or who cares enough about this to go ahead and make this call. Any questions about this action, reach out and ask for co-sponsorship from the nearest Republican in either the House or Senate or both. No questions? Okay. Gosh, we are at 2 minutes to the top of the hour, and that's going to take us over the hour to do a laser talk. But I'm kind of determined to do a laser talk. I would love to see a show of hands, just to make this as democratic as possible. Press 1 on your keypad if you're willing to stay an additional 4 minutes to have a laser talk and some deeper training on the Youth Promise Act. Go ahead and press 1. Let's see how many 1s show up as far as who's got that extra 4, possibly 5 minutes to spend. Oh, I see a bunch of 1s lighting up the screen. I love to see it. Okay, more than half. Looks like 2/3, 3/4. Brilliant. Okay, so we'll try to get this done by 2:04, 2:05. What is a laser talk? I think many of you know this. A laser talk is basically to help prepare you to go ahead and take this action with a little more confidence, a little more capability. I'm going to share a series of statements about the Youth Promise Act. I'm going to go all the way through these 5 or 6 statements, and it'll be statements such as, the U.S. is about 5% of the world's population, but we incarcerate over 25% of the world's prisoners. And I'll share several more statements like that. And then I will share those statements again, but the second time I go through, I will ask you to fill in some blanks. I'll ask leading questions, okay? Like for instance, I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody to ask you. There you go. You're all unmuted. So what I want to ask you to do is fill in the blank. So the second time through, I will say, the U.S. is around what percent of the world's population? Go ahead and shout it out. What percent is the U.S. of the world's population?
5.
Brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. And we incarcerate about what percent of the world's prisoners?
25%.
25%, yes. So then I'll go through and recite the rest of this information the second time. And then the third time through, I will go through this a third time. I'll ask similar leading questions, and I'll ask you to just think the answer. Just think it quietly to yourself in your mind, okay? For instance, I will say the U.S. is about what percent of the world's population? Just think the answer quietly. The U.S. is about 5% of the world's population, but we incarcerate about what percent of the world's prisoners? Just think the answer. We incarcerate 25% of the world's prisoners. Okay, you guys are pros. Okay, awesome. And the concept is, right after we do this, we're going to end the call, and this information and these ideas and inspiration will be fresh in your minds, and I'll encourage you to go ahead and get on the website of the nearest Republican member of Congress right away, write that email, even go ahead and call the switchboard of the U.S. Congress. The number of the switchboard is on your action sheet, and leave a message for your member of Congress saying, I am so-and-so, I live in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and I want you to co-sponsor the Youth Promise Act. You can give the bill number. It's there on the action sheet. Okay? So here we go. First time through from the top. The U.S. is about 5% of the world's population, but we incarcerate over 25% of the world's prisoners. We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than the next 12 industrialized nations combined. The Youth Promise Act would promote proven effective, community-based prevention and intervention practices. Pennsylvania adopted a similar approach to the Youth Promise Act and found that over a 10-year period, for every dollar invested, they saved $5, and they reduced youth incarceration so much that they were able to close a 100-bed juvenile detention facility. We call on our senators and House members to co-sponsor the Youth Promise Act. Okay, there it is all the way through. Now I'm going to go back to the top, and I'll ask some leading questions, and I want you to shout out the answer, okay? The U.S. is about what percent of the world's population? What percent?
5%.
Yes, 5%. We incarcerate about what percent of the world's prisoners?
25%.
That's right. 25%. We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than who?
Well,
the next 12 industrial nations combined.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than the next 12 industrialized nations combined. The Youth Promise Act would promote, now what kind of programs would it promote? They are proven to be what? Proven?
Effective.
Community-based? Yes, they're proven effective. Yeah, they're based where? Where are they based?
The community.
Local. Yes, they're based in the community. And what kind of practices are they in general? We call them blank and blank.
Proven and effective.
Preventative.
Those are all good, yes. Prevention and intervention is kind of some key words. So promote proven effective, community-based, prevention and intervention practices. Okay. Now, there was a state that adopted a similar approach. What state are we talking about?
Pennsylvania,
yes. They adopted a similar approach to the Youth Promise Act, and over a 10-year period, what was their return on investment? What did they find?
For every $1, they saved
$5.
Yes, exactly. For every $1 they invested, they saved $5, and they reduced youth incarceration so much, what were they able to do?
Close detention.
Close 100-bed juvenile detention center.
Yes, yes, yes. They closed a 100-bed juvenile detention center, detention facility. So we're calling on, who are we asking? We're asking whom? This is a question for whom?
Our congressmen, the Republican congressmen.
Yes, our senators and House members, in this case the Republican ones. And what are we asking them to do?
Co-sponsor
the Youth Promise Act. Exactly. Okay. Last time through from the top, and this time I'll just ask you to think the answer, okay? Just think it silently to yourself. You're still unmuted just because, but temptation will be there, but keep it silent in your head. This helps to get it really deep in your bones. Okay, the U.S. is about what percent of the world's population? Just think the answer.
5.
The U.S. is about 5% of the world's population, but we incarcerate over what percent of the world's prisoners? Just think it to yourself now. Just think the answer to yourself. We incarcerate over 25% of the world's prisoners. And we incarcerate more juveniles per capita than whom? Just to yourselves now. We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than the next 12 industrialized nations combined. The Youth Promise Act would promote some practices. They're proven to be what? They're proven to be effective. They're based where? Where are they based? They're community-based or locally based. And we would call these practices in general. What's the general expression for these practices? Blank and blank? Prevention and intervention practices. Proven, effective, community-based, prevention and intervention practices. Okay, what state adopted a similar approach to the Youth Promise Act? Just to yourself now. This is all just to yourself. Pennsylvania adopted a similar approach to the Youth Promise Act, and over a 10-year period, what did they find? What was their return on investment? Just to yourself. Good, good, good. For every dollar invested, they saved $5, and then they reduced youth incarceration so much, what were they able to do? They were able to close a 100-bed juvenile detention facility. Okay, who are we calling on? We're calling on some people now. We're calling on our senators and our House members. Senators and House members. And what do we want them to do? Just to yourself now? We want them to co-sponsor the Youth Promise Act. Okay, wonderful. Now I want you to, optimally, if you're together with anybody, this would be a great time to practice. You could get off the call and you could just practice as much as you remember. Just go back and forth and try it out. Say, hey, this is what I remember. You can do it with yourself right now if you like, just to see how much of this is stuck in your brain. The next thing that I would love you to do is to go ahead and take action. Find out who the nearest Republican member of Congress is who is not a co-sponsor, and there are relatively few of them, so it's pretty easy to do. Most of you are aware, I know, if you go to congress.gov and search by bill name, you can find out who the co-sponsors are of any bill. Congress.gov, Youth Promise Act. You can see who the co-sponsors are just to make sure. And go ahead and send that email. If you can't send the email because you're blocked by not being in the right zip code, go ahead and make the call to the number that's listed on your action sheet. I so appreciate you all being with us, and I wish you all the best. I thank you for coming together in a spirit of peace, in a spirit of positive change in the world. And I hope you all feel it and share it. And I wish you a beautiful weekend. The mics are still open, so you can say goodbye and thank you to each other. And feel free to contact us. If you have any interest in starting or joining a Peace Alliance action team, dan@peacealliance.org. And there also are forms on our website under action teams. Feel free to check in. Much love to you all and best wishes.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.